that no matter what happens as a result of me meeting this person, it's what I do with it that decides whether or not it was a success. So I meet this person, we're gone one day, I feel rejected, I use my trigger protocol to work through those feelings, perfect, it was a success. I got to work on something I needed to work on. We go out on 10 dates and I'm falling in love, and then I find out they're seeing another 3 people who are also falling in love with them. Ouch, that hurt. Now I know where the wound is, I'll go straight into that. Perfect, that was a success, thank you very much. And I just think that whole mentality is what you need going into a conscious relationship.
Hey, beautiful souls, welcome to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. Today we have a special guest with us, and their name is Mickey and Emma. Now, Mickey and Emma are a relationship consultant and mentors, integrating spiritual teachings and practical knowledge to bring clarity and insight into the world of relationships. After a spontaneous Kundalini awakening in 2018, Mickey began to experience tantric gifts, which very quickly pulled him to his childhood sweetheart and soulmate Emma, who almost immediately experienced her own Kundalini activation and emergence of gifts. So without further ado, let's bring them on. Hi Mickey and Emma, how are you doing?
Hi, really good. You? Good.
Yeah, not too bad. And I know you guys moved to Spain, right? Sunny Spain?
Yeah. Yes.
Whereabouts are you in Spain?
We're in Denia, like the southern part on the mainland of Spain.
Yeah, amazing. Now, just thinking back where we met, you know, we met like, was it over last year, over a year ago, during lockdown, actually. We met on online retreats that you guys were holding, and then Mickey went to Spain, and me and Emma actually went on a walk to Dovestone Reservoir. We connected, we had some insights, we had so much fun, and it's just amazing how we met, because now I'm on your relationship course. So, because you guys are experts, they're amazing, like, you know, I'm sure we're gonna find out more about your story, but you know, every time I see you guys, it's just incredible, because you know, I've never seen a love like yours, you know, and I've always had a different, oh, love has to be this that way, and you know every single day you guys surprise me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, so obviously I know who you are, and our listeners don't know who you are. So could you tell us a bit about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm Emma. I am 39 years old. Like you said, we're living in Spain. For most of my adult life, I've been a registered nurse, living in the UK up until I was about 24, and then moving to the US, and I've spent like 13 years living there. From a relationship standpoint, I've been married twice and divorced twice. And then this is my third relationship now with Mickey. So that's a little bit about me.
So I'm 38, just a little bit younger than Emma. I've lived quite a colourful life. I've travelled quite a lot and spent a lot of time having parties with friends and things like that, and then had quite a big spiritual awakening a couple of years ago that really did like change the direction of my life. So that brought us to where we're at now.
Oh, amazing. Cool. What about could you briefly tell us about the course that you're offering right now?
Yeah, go on.
Yeah, so we essentially have one course, and we call it Awakening in Relationships, and it's on an online platform, so it's the ability to take the course that way, in like a self-paced course. And then we also have it where we run it live, which is what you are on, Madhya.
Yeah.
And then we also do it that way, plus we do it with you know, one-on-one time with us. And the course is very much about, you hear about spiritual awakening, you know, where people all of a sudden kind of the blinkers come off and it's a whole new world that they've discovered. And we feel that the course is that in relationships. because we're not really taught anything, are we, about relationships? It's all very much you kind of fumble through the dark and hope you do a kind of good enough job. It, you know, it either reflects somewhat of what your parents did, or it's a massive 180 of that, because you would never want to do that. But normally it's very much where you're just kind of fuddling along and kind of doing the best that you can with whatever it is that you're given. So we really want to open people's eyes to different possibilities and a different awareness, but ultimately for them to pick whatever kind of relationship works for them, but just to together, you know, reimagine what a relationship could look like. That's really what we want everyone to get from the course, to get excited, especially if they've been single maybe for a long time, but get excited about the prospect of getting back out to that date, you know, into the dating world. And
to be able to go in with excitement instead of fear that, yeah, oh, what if this goes wrong, what if that goes wrong, what if they don't like me, what if I find out I don't like them after a little while, and so much anxiety around it. And and then in the relationship, even if it does go well, we find a lot of people just really don't thrive in there, and they have communication difficulties and don't understand why they're often falling out or disagreeing over things. And it's just a huge, like we say, like an awakening in that area. So we can see really clearly, so I'm behaving like this because of this, this and this. They're behaving like they are because of that, that and that. And then when we come together, we butt heads, we fall out, we don't say anything and we go quiet, and then nothing's happening. So it can go both ways.
Well, we'll talk about your course and the relationship itself in a bit, but how did you guys meet then? Because I feel like you guys, I know you don't like saying twin flames, but I definitely do think you are twin flames. You have a journey of a twin flame.
Well, I'll let you tell the story. I feel like he's a better storyteller than I am, so I'll let him tell it, and I can get all gushy as I listen to it.
Well, I mean, the first time I heard that term, twin flame, I'd never heard it before. But it was when I was relaying, just after I'd met Emma, actually, the second time around, as adults, so I'll come to that in a second. But I was just relaying the story to someone, and they were like, oh my God, you found your twin flame. And I was like, my what? And she's like, you don't know what one is? And I said, no, what? So anyway, Sharon, you need to look it up. And when I looked up, it was like 20 signs, you know what you find online, right? Yeah. 20 signs you found your twin flame. And it was just exactly a textbook from beginning to end. The only resistance I have to these words is I try and avoid buzzwords where possible. I don't know why. It's just something I've always done, but I see what you're saying. So how we met was, I was brought up in a city, the city of Bradford in the UK. And I lived there for the first 10 years of my life. And then at that point, we moved over to a different town, to a town called Halifax. And this was about 3 months before the end of junior school, right? First school. And as soon as I walked in into the school, I remember there was a lot of eyes. You know, it's like new kid comes right at the end of the year. So all the eyes were on me, and a lot of people wanted to get to know me and things like that. And with me being called Mickey, right, and Emma's nickname was Minnie, and she went to that school, and everyone were going, Mickey and Minnie, and they were pointing at us both, and basically they were putting us together, weren't they? And she always had a purple t-shirt on with a Minnie Mouse on the front, I remember. So we were about 10 at this point, right, last year of high school, of junior school, so I think we were like 10 years old. And so we kind of got pulled together, and we were there for about a year or so, constantly walking around like this with his arms around each other and kissing in the bus shelter, I remember, riding bikes, going for walks, playing out, climbing trees, all of it, weren't it?
Sneaking into his bedroom. A naughty 10-year-old.
The one thing I remember is just running onto Emma's house. Like every day, you know, as soon as I'd finished school or whatever, just getting my clothes on and just running as fast as I could to get to her house. So that's how we met the first time around. Second time around?
You want me to say this?
Yeah.
All right. So second time around, I mean, it's almost 26 years later. So by this point, Mickey had moved to Spain and I was living in America. And just very impromptu, because I decided to go home to England for 4 days over Christmas. And, you know, going home for 4 days is no easy feat. You know, I'm a really busy nurse working 12, 13 hours days, but I managed to swing it so I could get 4 days off. So I just felt this really big pull to go home for Christmas. And at the same time, Mickey's mum and sister surprised him with a flight home to England for Christmas. And so it was, you know, unexpected for him as well. And then I'd been home 2 days so far at this point, and then went out on a girls' night out with my friends and sisters. And in the local pub, which is the pub that Mickey's mum owns, was Mickey. He was there. And so he just beelined over, but he knows my family anyway. So he knows my sisters really, really well, you know, obviously from our childhood. So came over and he started speaking, and I was like, completely speechless. I looked over at my sister. I was like, help me out. Like, I have no clue. I don't even know what to say. Totally unexpected. And it was just cataclysmic, honestly, from there. I really, really felt like we were puppets. You know, like we were just being orchestrated, seriously. It's a very difficult thing to describe, you know, just how powerful this was. Mm-hmm. But it was a beautiful, beautiful reunion, if you like, you know, of going from 10 years old to here we are as adults.
So that were Emma's end. What was happening at my end was, how much of the story do you want? How long have we got? Okay.
Free to edit what you need.
Okay, so let's just start at 2018, which was a time around a big... awakening, probably phase three, you know, and we awaken in different phases, don't we?
Yeah.
And that was a real big awakening at that point in 2018, a Kundalini activation. So this is what made me think probably yes to the twin flame thing that you talk about a lot. Because they often follow a Kundalini activation is what I've heard.
Yeah.
Right, so when I've read about it, it sometimes happens that way. So in 2018, the body starts to do movements by itself at this point, starts to do yogic postures and things like that. And then I moved from, I was in, what's it called? Marbella, doing an ayahuasca retreat. And then from there, I moved to Ibiza. I didn't know where I was going in life, didn't know what to do, didn't know where to put my energy, had no direction. The business that I worked for had just gone bankrupt back in the UK. So I'd just flown off to Marbella in Spain to go to this retreat. And at this point, I was kind of like, right, whatever happens after here, I have no idea. One foot in front of the other and we'll see. And then after there, I decided to fly back to Ibiza, which is where, another Spanish island, one of the Balearics where I used to live. And I flew back over there to see some friends, and I started to get lots of revelations, one after another. You know, like insights, downloads, people call them, just understandings, more of these movements, visions and things like that. And over the course of probably... That retreat was the 11th to the 22nd of July, and we met on the 28th of December. So there wasn't a huge gap between this retreat and us coming together again. So while I was in Ibiza, there was like a series of moments, and you know when you get those moments and they kind of... It's like a real strong synchronicity or just something that you think this is significant. I need to make a note of this. Or if you get really emotional, for me, if I get really emotional and I feel like I want to cry and it's something really odd, like something that's not obviously why, it's not something that is an obvious reason why it would bring me to tears. When that happens, I kind of know that it's a spiritual communication when I get these butterflies and this like strong emotion. And so I were writing these moments down, these things, these little lessons in my phone, right, just in the notes. And I had no idea I was waiting for anybody. Like I said, it wasn't on my radar. I was quite freshly single, and for me it was all about making spirituality my number one, not a relationship. And this was actually one of the steps that I found led us together, was not needing a relationship, not even really wanting one particularly, but just experiencing love from Source, really, really deeply connecting to Source, to my guides, which is another story altogether, but I'd kind of met my guides on that retreat, so I then had this nice connection. And then there was another thing, and then another thing, like some role models, people who I saw, and it was like, I want that relationship. Real examples of a really beautiful, conscious relationship, and I was thinking, I want a relationship like that. Mm. Get that? I want one like that. And then there was a moment of just realizing my own value in a relationship, what I had to offer. And then there was the truth and the realization that I don't have to go out and find them, I can call it in. And so there were several steps that I'd written down, and as they all came together, I just remember one night I were reading Conversations with God. Really, oh, yeah. Really good book.
Love that book.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's a part in book two about Tom and Mary, and it's talking about how couples come together, how they unite. And it's saying there's Tom and Mary, right? So imagining that they're going to come together. Now, what the book is saying is they already meet first energetically, and then they're both drawn towards the essence of Tom and Mary combined, which it calls Tom Mary, Tom Mary, right? So it says they're both drawn to that like moths to a flame. And then when they come together, they'll feel all the vibrations in the body, they get the butterflies, they feel the sensations in the genitalia, they want to mate, they want to sleep together. And it was when I read that, something clicked. And I realized what all this was, all this list that I'd been writing down. And I said, I'm ready, like, bring it to me. I didn't know I was waiting for somebody, but I was like, and I was in like no rush whatsoever. I've got my thing. I don't know where I'm going in life right now. I don't have my direction fully sorted yet. I knew it was going to be helping people. I knew it was going to be some kind of coaching or, you know, something similar, some sort of mentoring. So I was going down that road and I said, yeah, bring it to me. Cool. And I says, but just give me another sign. Give me a really big sign, an obvious sign. And yeah, it was really funny when we first met. Yeah. I think we'd spoken for seconds, and Emma's got this beautiful tattoo, and it goes all the way up. If you can
amazing.
See it there,
amazing.
And she had a big gap on the other side, and I said to her, "What are you getting in that gap? There was just a gap. Oh, beautiful tattoo. What's going in the gap?" And she went, "A feather." Now, probably should have mentioned before, I've been finding feathers everywhere since I met my spirit guides. Everywhere I was looking, there were feathers. And in very specific places. So, you know, like odd places at odd times or specific times, where it got to the point where I weren't very spiritual at this point, by the way. I was, but not angels and things like that. For me, it was all just about oneness and kind of getting my head around spirituality. It was spiritual intelligence. But at this point, it became like a real thing. And I remember actually Googling at this point, why do I keep finding feathers everywhere? I thought it must be a sign. Why do I keep finding feathers? Mm. Yeah, and it said, it's your angels. And I was like, oh, yeah, feathers, yeah. Angels. I've just met these guys. Makes perfect sense.
That's actually,
so yeah, when I saw...
It's actually, you know, what you call it, feathers and numbers. It's known for twin flame as well. Like, I could just briefly talk about my experience, like really brief. Like, when I met mine, now twin flames are very tricky topic because, you know, you feel that energy before they enter your life. And then when they enter your life, it's like, great. And then it's like chaos. One of them runs and the other one kind of chases. And that goes back and forth, push and pull. Until in all of that, so what was happening is healing within themselves. So the conscious one wakes up first, actually. The one who chases wakes up, but the one is more materialistic and not even looking at their trash. And yeah, and then once the one that's chasing stops, it's like, no, like, I feel great without you. I don't want a relationship or anything. You kind of just balance it all out. And apparently that's when the union sort of thing happens. And I guess the same thing happened with you when you kind of woke up to the fact that you don't need anybody, you know, you don't want anybody, and that's when the right person comes anyway. It's a bit like, yeah. I'm too busy with my life and I don't want to deal with relationships. I don't want relationships. I don't have time for them, and that's when the right person comes. That's the test, whether you can work at it or not, because if you can't, then the right person goes and then you're like, okay, I'm actually looking for it. You're attracted. Okay, there's a toxic person again.
Do you know what you just said there? I actually really resonate with when you said you can see them, you can feel them before you meet. Mm. I just remember seeing my Facebook posts, going back and looking at my Facebook posts before we met, and I were on a real, real significant high. Felt absolutely amazing. You know, I was just in such a good space in my life. Mm. And like you said, when I just said, oh, bring her to me, and something just felt like high, but I didn't know it was twin flame. Maybe that's what I would have been thinking about if I'd have heard this term.
Yeah, I mean, the twin flame label is to put a label on a connection that we can't even describe properly. You know, it's so intense. You know, when I met mine, like I said, I felt her energy before, and then I actually met, but then it was like great poof, chaos. And then I had my spiritual awakening, went on to. And that's where it is, like, you know, but the thing with twin flames is like, you don't, you know, some of them aren't meant to be together in the same lifetime. It could be another lifetime. So if you're moved on and gone, that's it. It's done. There may be other soulmates who will fulfill that love for you. You know, going into conscious relationship, what is conscious relationship?
So to me, a conscious relationship is really, really quite different from one that is just kind of existing. There's a lot of intention behind a conscious relationship, and it really takes two people to make one. So the intention essentially is all about growing and evolving and being the best version that we can be individually, but then also together as a couple. So I would say that's like one of the main focus is what a conscious relationship, like anything that comes up for me and Mickey, we see it as an opportunity. We don't see it as a source of conflict or something to be seen as negative. We just see it as this beautiful opportunity, and then with love we together look at this thing to see what we can do with it, whether what it's asking for, you know. But ultimately it's all about growth and developing, and us. It's a lot about purpose as well. It's joining what we're both here to do on the planet, and to be that force together as a couple, and to radiate that out as far and as wide as we can. I mean, just a little one, just that's personal to us, is to have a conscious baby as well, like, you know, to birth that into the world.
Oh my God, and, Mickey and Emma's conscious baby.
That's the hope.
That's the plan.
Yeah. Would you add to that?
Yeah, what would I say about a conscious relationship? The main thing that I would say about it is the textbook, other than conscious relationship, is one where we meet somebody and we get really close, and we're meeting each other's needs a lot, right? The honeymoon period, everything's getting ticked. We're spending so much time together, quality time. We're touching each other, we're making a lot of love, we're giving each other a lot of affection, attention. And so suddenly we feel like all our needs are being met. And any feelings that we had of deficiency, or I'm not lovable, or I'm not worthy, seem to be gone for a little while as someone showers you with all this affection. But what's happening during this time is not sustainable. There's, you know, it's that's not how the relationship is always going to be, that someone's always going to be throwing themselves at you, because you know what it's like, right? When you're in that stage of a relationship, like, you get nothing done, can't stop thinking about the other person all the time. Every time your phone goes off, you get excited, and you you know, get butterflies and stuff like that, and you just, it's not sustainable, and the chemicals that cause that wear off. And so that can be up to about 2 years, and that this lasts, if you're lucky, I guess, because it is a beautiful stage.
Yeah.
Well, a conscious relationship, instead of going up, hitting that point, and then going down, the conscious relationship continues to go up. So we go through the honeymoon period, but during that time, we know each other really deeply. We know exactly what each other are up against, what our deepest difficulties are, because we all have our own difficulties, right? We understand what the other person really needs. We understand how the other person likes to be loved. So we just study each other with things like the love languages that I know you know about, and other methods of kind of communication. Some people use non-violent communication. But what we say is the honeymoon period is an amazing time to do that, to get to know each other to the point that when that honeymoon period wears off, which it inevitably does, you're still then really, really close. You understand each other to the point that you're not going to have petty arguments. You realise there's more going on than that. So that's what a conscious relationship is for me. Right. And that we work together, same team, always.
Same team, yeah.
Same team.
We do say that all the time. If anything comes up, you know, we look at each other and, you know, if we can see that one person is, you know, is triggered, then we say, you know, let's look at this together, same team. And it definitely makes, you know, the whole energy around it shifts, you know. So obviously when a lot of conflict comes up in relationship, the first thing you do is want to get defensive and you know, and retreat a little bit, and it's, you know, it's understandable, but obviously the whole goal is to move us forward, because how many relationships, they're having the same argument a lot of times over and over. It's often, you know, a one or two common themes that they're kind of spinning on. And to be able to move beyond that as a couple and to, you know, to transcend beyond it is a beautiful thing to get to do, obviously for everybody, for everyone around you, you know, to not be arguing. And
yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I would say that, like, in a couple, well, imagine as a single person, that your reality is about as big as the things that trigger you, if that makes sense. So for example, if you look over there and you see someone eating a certain way and that triggers you, that puts you back in your head. You're like, oh, that's so annoying, that person's doing that. Straight away, you can't see anything else. Reality disappears to you, it's just that thing. And I really feel like this is what goes on anyway. So my life has been about, for quite a few years now, just about letting go of things that trigger me. So if something's triggering, just to go into it, face it head on, allow it to be there, use a certain protocol to heal it. Now, as a couple, we do that together. So it's, let's work together to dissolve all these triggers. And every time you dissolve triggers, your life gets a little bit bigger and then a little bit bigger, because there's not things in close proximity that are triggering this response that puts us in our heads. And so you just find the world seems like a more accessible place. Like traveling and moving around, and I seem to take more in, opportunities are more visible, and it's because we're not triggered all the time. So in a conscious relationship, it's the two of us working together to resolve all the triggers that keep us small, right, and limited and stuck and stressed.
And I guess it's really important to be with someone who is on a spiritual path, I guess, like, because you know, when you're dealing with triggers, if two people get together, say for example, you know, they have no idea what attachment styles is, they have no idea what their triggers and their patterns are, it's going to turn into a toxic relationship because they have no idea how to deal with it, you know. Whereas two conscious people coming together, you know, they know about the attachments. Okay, I'm more anxious, I'm more avoidant. How can we work with that, you know? They say that the anxious and the avoidant, it's hard to maintain that relationship. But when you know your like styles, or you know, you can work through them. It's not, you don't always have to seek a secure person. If you feel like connection, you can work through it. And relationships is probably the most growth you can get, the most growth in relationships than outside of it, because the trigger's going up my left, right and center. Yeah,
absolutely agree with that.
Well, no one knows you as best normally as what your partner does, and so they'll know your kind of weak spots, if you want to refer to them like that, or where your wounds are. I think we've probably all had instances in a relationship where someone said something, they've really cut deep because they knew that thing about you.
And what we want to say is, well, about being on the same team, it's when we use that data, if you want to call it data, to be thoughtful about the other person rather than to manipulate the other person. You know, so everything we know about them, we use it to help them, not, and to understand them, not to use as a weapon in an argument, which obviously happens a lot, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
So yeah, we're just about becoming more thoughtful.
So Can you give us any more tips of if there are conflicts in a conscious relationship, what sort of thing that they could do, like step by step, or how to deal with it?
Probably the first thing is deeply understanding what's yours and what's theirs, and taking 100% responsibility for your part in things is probably the first thing. Because if you're really not clear on or owning your part in things, then it's really difficult to look at something together if there's a lot of blame there and if you're coming from that place. So I'd say take 100% responsibility, which when you do that properly, then you're not going to project that onto somebody else, and so that's, you know, the other massive piece, isn't it?
What else would you say? There's taking 100% responsibility, being on the same team, obviously. Mm-hmm. Absolutely be on the same team. I would say there's something about non-verbal communication that I really like. I think that sometimes we just need to be close, whether that's making eye contact, whether that's hugging, whether that's just gently just maybe putting our hands on the other person's shoulder or back, just intuitively. And I know that's something we've done quite a lot, isn't it? Just sometimes it's not, there's no point talking about it. Because we kind of, let's say you've already come to understand where each other sit on an issue. Sometimes it's like, okay, there's nothing to say about it. You can just hold each other. The other thing that I would say for communicating or for a healthy, conscious relationship is there's a particular thing that we're all up against. Now, when you know what your partner's is, you know how to navigate that. You know where they're coming from. Try and make this simple without using any lingo. That's the tricky part sometimes. I want to talk to the version of Emma that's the deepest version of her, to her essence, and recognizing what she's up against that's causing the personality. It's all about personality typing, right? And when we speak to, for example, if I speak to the little girl in Emma, an old coping mechanism that's wounded, that's who I bring forward. If I speak to her essence, that's what I bring forward. If I speak to someone who's in a bad mood, that's who I bring forward. Whatever I'm expecting to see in Emma and I'm speaking to that person, it brings it out, and vice versa, obviously. So I think in a relationship, if it's being careful to speak to the version of your partner that you want, because I know for a fact there's certain people who would be a nightmare for one person in a relationship and not at all for another. And that's the same person, might be a nightmare in one and really lovely in the other, and it's because it's how they've been treated, who's been brought out of them. And so to give you an example, I have a friend who has had a lot of trouble with a particular lady, and when I speak to this lady, she's always really, really nice, really kind, and he's like, I don't understand it. Why? How can you get on so well with this lady? I'm like, I don't know. I can't imagine not getting on with her at all. You know, I can't really imagine it. And I just realised that it is over the years that it is when, if you've already got a grudge and you're speaking to them in this way through the grudge that you have, they pick up on that and respond from that place, become defensive, become arrogant, become abusive, become or just upset, manipulative. So yeah, talk to the conscious being in each other, talk directly to that, and that's what will come out in the relationship. I'd say actually maybe if we just did that alone, all of us with everybody, the world would change pretty quickly. As all the personalities started to fall away, all the coping mechanisms, and the essence shone forward.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned a really awesome thing about non-communication when you know you dealt with it. Now, for people who aren't dealing with the issues, then it's so important to communicate, right? Like, the importance of communication is key. And I feel like many of our listeners, and including myself, we lack in this. Like, you know, communication. Before, I was like very good at it, but then as time went by, I kept getting hurt in, you know, in dating. And so I just kind of went in my cave and this is where I am now. It's like, I will not communicate whether I like you or not. I won't communicate. So maybe some of our listeners are in the same situation. What steps could I do and or listeners do to open that communication and look, this is how I feel and this is what I want to say to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely always be true to yourself, whatever it is that you do want to communicate. But I would just, what we teach is to go through a process. We refer to it as the trigger process or opportunity process. So, you know, to look at yourself before you communicate. So if you are, you know, loads of things are coming up, you can feel your heart racing, you know, your mind's all over the place. Don't jump on your phone at that moment. You know, don't communicate that, because it's probably not going to come from a true place. You might end up regretting whatever it is that you wrote and then just going into a kind of downward spiral with that. So I would say just take your time and just really get centered before you do communicate, and then it'll come from a more grounded place. And you know, if you put that you are into somebody and they were not ready to hear that, you know, if that's true for you and that was right, I would say go ahead and honor that. They're not where you are, and they can't meet you there. And then you've just saved yourself a bunch of time. It's like, okay, thank you for that, and thank you for letting me know that. You know, and then if the fact that they're not interested, if that brings up something else in you, that's another opportunity to look at something else that's them bringing up. But I would still honor yourself, and you know, when you're wanting to communicate whatever it is that you do. But if you're arbitrarily just kind of shooting off texts and kind of all over the place when you're doing it, maybe that might be a time where you want to dial it back a little bit and just take a little bit of time before you jump straight to your phone. I'm just using phone, for example, because we live on them, don't we? But, yeah. You know, and I know it's not an easy thing to do. It might sound easy, you know, and it might be a stepwise process for you to do it. And you might find that off. Freaking hell, I just sent that text and I were like so triggered in that moment. I was so all over the place. And it's like, it's okay, you know, we're human, it's all right. It's like you've caught the fact that you did that. So maybe next time, you know, have another opportunity to approach it differently and start over, you know.
Yeah, and kind of similar to what you're saying, for me, I would say, especially in dating, we're talking dating now as opposed to relationships. In dating, I've probably scared a lot of people off really, really quickly, because I do just absolutely just talk about whatever interests me and I'm just be completely myself and lay it on thick. And if they don't like it, that's I'm happy about that. Yeah,
I mean,
that's,
I was not on the spiritual path whatsoever, and when we met he was talking about ayahuasca and these spiritual beings and all of this. I'm like, well, this guy's, you know, pretty out there. But he was, again, puppets. It didn't matter what he said. I was like, so after
it. Yeah, we were talking about afterlife within minutes of meeting, weren't we, in a crowded pub?
Yeah. Well, you know, with the right person, obviously, everything's cool. I mean, with the wrong person, oh, my God, no way.
Well, someone just said to us recently that they sent off a message and it was all heartfelt and it was, you know, very spiritual based, and like, you know, how they know things to be true. And the other person were like, what the hell is this? Like, they were so not on that wavelength. And you know, and it was interesting to see that dynamic play out. But it's like, that's just such a massive, you've just saved yourself a bunch of time, you know. That they're just not on your wavelength, and nor do they want to meet you there, and that's cool, like that's fine. But still honor yourself, isn't it? Don't change yourself if that is your heart and soul and where your path is heading, you know. Don't change yourself to fit them.
I would absolutely say that, come from the heart, come from the soul. Even if you have an attachment style, as long as you're not making it the other person's fault. You know, let's say you're anxious attached, as long as you're not thinking they're running away or they're ignoring you or they're playing hard to get, as long as you realize it's not that they're doing that, it's that I'm expecting too much of them, I'm expecting more. But then, you know, you can be open about it. Say, oh yeah, I do inundate people with messages. Don't worry, you don't have to get back to me and stuff. That's just, it's just what I do. And then own it. And then just when you're feeling these feelings of like, oh, I wish they were messaging me back and they're not doing it, you're checking your phone. Exactly what Emma said. You have a protocol, you have a trigger process. So you use that and go, ah, perfect, I've got an opportunity to heal this thing. And every single time you experience it, you chip away at that wound using a trigger protocol. What we call trigger opportunity. We put the words together, trigger opportunity protocol, opportunity in capitals, so that it makes that association. I'm triggered opportunity. Go through the process, chip away. When you feel better, oh, cool, okay, I've worked through a bit of that stuff. And then you can, like you said, you can contact them at that point. And but I really would say, don't try to be something we're not at the beginning of a relationship. Little bits here and there, we show our better sides, or we might hold a few things back that are just things that are inappropriate to share too soon. Like maybe you don't want to discuss your wildest sexual fantasy the first time you meet. Maybe that's not on the table, but maybe a couple of weeks down the line.
You're saying that because he asked me that the first night we were together. Straight for it.
She told me straight up.
So you don't hold back this one.
Yeah. I normally just, when I'm on dates with someone or something, I'm the one who just open up about everything, really. There's nothing to, I would say, I can't hide the fact, oh, I'm this, that, the other. I just say, okay, this is my life, you know, I used to be caring and I am caring for my mom and this, that, and the other. And some people ghosted me for it. Some people, majority of time, people did ghost me for it, you know, but without even realizing that I'm free as a bird, you know. It's not like I'm cooped up, you know, inside my mom's place and looking after her. So people just judge really quickly because I feel like we live in an instant world where, you know, like all the online dating and all that jazz, you know, you're swiping really quickly and you're like judging people really, really, really quickly. One date gone, second date, no, not feeling it. She said this, she wore the wrong shoes or he wore the wrong shoes and we're not going on a second date. It's like this, we're not patient enough to build something, you know, and plus there's so many options out there that, you know, it's just, I don't know how people can build something when there's so many options out there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, with this, it sounds perfect what you're saying. If you go out and you let them know exactly who you are, that sounds perfect. Mm. What might be a slight improvement in that area might be if you were more picky about or more selective about who you went with. So instead of like choosing, and this, I'm not just saying you, but just in general, what often people will do is if they get thrown a few breadcrumbs of affection, they go, oh, potential love, and they dive onto it, right? And they want more, more, more. And so because they do that, they latch onto anybody who looks at them. Mm. And especially if this person's really pretty as well, like you are, then a lot of people are going to be looking at you, right? And so there's an opportunity to kind of spend time and date a lot of people. But if you're not selective, there's no way you're going to be compatible with all of them. So you're going to get, quote unquote, rejected, turned down, or whatever, loads of times, because you're going on a lot of dates with a lot of people and you're not compatible with a lot of people or everyone. So yeah, I would say just be more selective in the first place.
Yeah, that's what I find as well, because like even when I'm on these dating sites, there's so many matches just pop up and I was like, I can't keep up with all of them, you know. It's like talking to, hi, how are you, hi, how are you? It's like I cannot do it, you know. Just like, okay, let me just get to know this person first. Okay, that didn't work. okay that one. Yeah. I just don't work like that. It's just too many options. It's like I can't deal with it. Universe, just send me the right person and that's it.
just send me one.
Just send me one, not so many.
And can they have a big arrow over the head pointing, saying this one? <please?" laughs> You've got to ask for the sign.
Oh my god, yeah.
I think when I say be selective as well, it doesn't mean don't date. I was still dating and seeing people, but there was just zero expectation. It was purely for the sake of, in fact, when I was doing that, I'm off confidence. You know, people go speed dating just to build their own confidence. So I was kind of doing that, going out and picking up, but really just for confidence. You know, there was nothing in it. I weren't expecting anything. I weren't even expecting to sleep together at the end of the night. It was just building the confidence to approach people and just talk. And so I was doing a lot of that when we met. So I think that expectation's a big deal. If you're expecting every date to go further as well, that's when you feel rejected, isn't it? Whereas if you're just going on the date for the sake of having a good night and you don't care if anything happens afterwards, that's damage limitation as well. So you're not always putting everything, all your eggs in one basket and then feeling like all your world's been collapsed when they've taken that potential away. So
yeah, absolutely. So you talked about compatible a few times there. How do we know, how can we tell if we're compatible with someone?
I think, you know, this is coming up quite a bit lately because we've been doing something called the four quadrants. And I think one of the ways that you can know if you're compatible with somebody is when you know really, really clearly what you want. And then you will know whether, you know, when you put yourself out there, like you were saying, and you would describe that this is who I am, this is what I do, this is what my vision is for my life, you know, all of these things. And I think if you know yourself really, really well, then you would just literally need to have a conversation. And just based on the few things that they say, whether they fall into that or whether they don't, then I think that's a massive part of compatibility. But I think majority of people don't really know what they want in a relationship. That's where I said in the beginning, I think we just kind of fumble into it and think, oh, you're hot, you know, yeah, you look all right. I think that can work. That were definitely me in my past two relationships. If I would have thought about compatibility back then, I was definitely not going to have babies. My first husband really didn't want to travel that much. Was really quite an old-fashioned kind of guy. The values and ethics that he had were very old-fashioned to me. You know, if I would have thought about these things ahead of time, there's no way we were compatible for a long-term relationship. So I think from a long-term relationship standpoint, compatibility, I think if you get to know what it is that you want, then you'll fast know if they're you know, A part of your world. Like, I know Mickey, when we met, he was so clear about this is where he was going to be living most likely. Not that these weren't like fixed and not open to discussion, but he was very clear on this is what I want my life to look like. This is the vision that I have. And what do you think? Where do you fit in that? Do you think that you do? Do you like the sound of that? And it was literally everything that I'd ever dreamed of. Like, even my family could corroborate. Like, that's what she said she's always wanted. And it was like, absolutely that. And so, you know, in addition to obviously the physical side of things, that attraction needs to be there. Then you add all those other pieces, and then it's, I think that's where you know you've got some really true compatibility between you.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. What would I add to that? I would say it's relevant. It's a little bit of a tangent, but you'll see what I mean. It is relevant. I think it's time that we redecide what relationship means and what a relationship is. All right, and I'll tell you what I mean by that. So if you look at it, most relationships fail. I know on our course we were showing a compatibility matrix, showing like who's compatible with who and how that works. Excuse me. And I remember one of the participants saying, well, I don't like this model at all because according to this, hardly anyone's compatible with anyone. I was like, yeah, that's the truth. She's like, but it says that all relationships will fail. I'm like, they pretty much all do. There's a really tiny fraction of relationships where they not only stay together for a long period of time, but actually it's healthy as well. So let's say for a lot of people, we might have an average of probably 5 to 10 partners in a lifetime. From kids, when we date a little bit, and you know, might spend a couple of years with one person, a few years with another, and then we might settle on one, and then we get married, and then potentially what happens then further down the line is you either stay together or you get divorced, and then you might have another partner and a second marriage and things like that. So I think there's at least a couple of handfuls on average for most people of partners in their life, and so if they're really, really lucky or on it and they've done a lot of inner work, one of those relationships will go the distance and it'll be healthy. So that's even just based on those arbitrary numbers. I just kind of pulled them out of a hat. But that would show that there's only 1 in 10 makes it and it might not even be healthy. So what I want to talk about is like changing what we think a relationship is, what it's for. Like, is it always to go the distance? If that's the case, then the whole system is massively broken, because that's not what relationships do. What they definitely do is evolve us. They heal us, they show us things we needed, they carry us. So let's say we're going through this journey of life and someone comes in, holds our hand through this period of it, and then they're like, okay, we've been through that, I need to go off and do this now, you go off and do that. Mm. And then someone else will come and hold our hand for another chapter, and then someone else comes. And I think the moment we look at it like that, that changes things. That changes how we show up in a relationship. That changes... it changes why we, how we show up in the relationship and why we show up in the relationship in the first place. Dating becomes something different. So we're not always needing it to be the one. We don't need everybody to be the one. We recognise that some relationships are going to be for a season. Mm. You know, what is it they say? Some for a reason, some for a season, some for a lifetime or something like that. And so I think if we want to get set ourselves free in the world of relationships and dating, that's a good place to be coming from. That no matter what happens as a result of me meeting this person, it's what I do with it that decides whether or not it was a success. So I meet this person, we go on one day, I feel rejected, I use my trigger protocol to work through those feelings, perfect, it was a success. I got to work on something I needed to work on. We go out on 10 dates and I'm falling in love, and then I find out they're seeing another 3 people who are also falling in love with them. Ouch, that hurt. Now I know where the wound is, I'll go straight into that. Perfect, that was a success, thank you very much. And I just think that whole mentality is what you need going into a conscious relationship.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You just said it perfectly then, where I often say this as well. It's like all the people that's come into my life or anyone's life is like there for a reason, so for you to grow. Then they go and then you learn something and then they come again, another person. It's like, it feels like... if it isn't the right, well, I keep saying right person, then it's a preparation for the right person, you know. So, you know, each time it didn't work out, it took me a long time to get to this place, because I was always like, oh my God, they're leaving me. Because I was mostly anxious attached, and it was like, I had abandonment issues. They left me. Oh, they're not interested in me and this, that, and the other. But now I realize they were just a preparation, because now every time I go into a dating world or relationship or whatever, it's different, because I learned something more, and I'm trying not to carry what I had from the previous, you know, and that's the way to go forward, right? And each time you go
further. That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's beautiful how life works like that, isn't it? Because we do hear about these patterns where they keep getting with the same type of person, and that's because life will keep giving you the same opportunity. So that's why we do teach to bring it all home to you and get into you and see what's happening to you, because this will keep playing out. You'll just get another opportunity. It might look a little bit different maybe, but at the core of it, whatever that is, it's life saying, look at this thing, you know, this is separating you from yourself and from feeling true love and happiness. We're going to give you another opportunity to look at that. And for some people, unfortunately, they need a lot of that, you know.
Yeah,
I was one of them. Like, it takes a lot for me to change. When I change, I'm right there, and I'm you know, right behind it. But I needed a lot of lessons, you know. Some people are that way. Some people are like, got the lesson, thank you, on to the next.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You know, and they can really alchemize it, and some people struggle more with that.
Yeah. So why do things often go stale in a relationship?
You know, a lot of it can do with this honeymoon period, like Mickey was talking about, this first 3 to 24 months when all the love chemicals are in, everything's absolutely great. And then after that time period, so depending on when that is for a person, then all this stuff will start to come up out of the unconscious. And I think when people are not aware that this is happening, then what can happen is, then they start to grow apart and they start to separate. And I think, you know, that can always look very different depending on the dynamic of both people. But then oftentimes resentment starts, you know, the sex life stops happening. There's two hormones that are released during orgasm. So if you're intimate with your partner, there's oxytocin, which is like the cuddle bonding hormone. And then there's another hormone called vasopressin. which is released. And interestingly, vasopressin, they found every human has vasopressin in their bodies, and they looked at these prairie voles, and there's a certain type of prairie vole that has higher levels of vasopressin, and they're monogamous in their world. And there's these other two types of prairie voles that are not monogamous, and they injected this vasopressin into them and they became monogamous. So if you are no longer being intimate together, or not as much as you were, and the orgasms are not happening, then you can start to grow apart for that reason as well. Because these, I think they refer to them as commitment hormones. They deplete in your relationship. So if you're starting to grow apart, and you know there's been a lot of arguments and a lot of resentment going on, and the intimacy is gone, then I think that's one of the reasons where you can start to grow apart. And obviously, then, especially if someone does then lead to infidelity or something like that, that's really difficult to come back from for a couple.
And then another thing I would say, when it goes stale, from the way that I'm interpreting that word as well, is there's two things. It either loses the polarity, the sexual attraction. So if that's two people both in their masculine or two people both in their feminine, there's no polarity, so it'll go stale. It'll just be like very wishy-washy, neither here nor there. And another one is if the people don't know themselves very well, the conversations are going to be very shallow, and that's going to wear thin pretty quickly. So if you want your relationship to go deeper and to not go stale, we need to work with masculine, feminine polarity, and we need to really like get to know each other, deep conversations.
Which means needing to get to know yourself deeply.
Means needing to get to know yourself.
That's been a big one for me in our relationship, is the depth that I was able to go was not very deep. I mean, literally, you could have asked me, you know, what was a hobby of mine, or my favourite colour or something like that, and I'm like, I don't know. And it's like, how can you have a deep, intimate conversation with someone that's not really explored the depths of anything? So that's definitely something that we cultivate in a relationship, because I wouldn't be able to meet Mickey there in the intimacy side of things, because he's all about that self-reflection and exploration, aren't you?
And conversations just don't get boring. You can explore the depths of stuff, and I know, like you as well, I bet you've had some interesting conversations about, you know,
the universe,
what's out here and what's
out
here.
I'm on a boat where I cannot get in a relationship if you can't have a deep conversation. You need to explore. Or I can't just if someone is there and they say, oh, well, this is the way I am, and not look at it, I was like, no, because you because like, okay, no, when you're with me, you're gonna be looking at your nonsense. because this is why we want to attract people who are on a conscious and a spiritual path, really, you know, who know how to deal with the internal work, and you can go the distance. Now, you know, many people go through a really bad breakup, right? And they stay single for a long time, and they close their heart to a possibility to love again. What sort of work could they do to open their hearts so they can feel that soul fulfilling love again?
Oh, there's loads. First thing I would say, there's different components to this, because emotionally we want to be okay with it, but also physically, there's something happens physically. So yoga is amazing for actually getting the heart open, using breath work, using postures, using mudras, hand movements that open it. So that's like the physical side. Also, you can do things like trauma release to get the stuff out, you know, to get trauma out of the body. Emotionally, forgiveness, acceptance, what we call the alchemy. So it's like recognizing, like we said before. So if I take away that what I thought the purpose of that relationship was, scrap that, start again. What was the actual purpose of the relationship? What has it taught me that is a positive lesson that I can take forward? And we pull the gold out of it, recognize the beauty of it, and then start to forgive, start to accept that's how it was. There was a gift in it. It's actually served me in the long run. And the other thing is building trust in ourselves to know that we can deal with whatever life throws at us. and not only be okay with it, but thrive because of it. So we do it with that last relationship. I can see why this is helping me thrive. And then we take action on that. Mm. And then we take that into any relationships going forward. So then we're not scared, right? We can go in realizing we have nothing to lose and everything to gain. Mm. And so for me, that's how I open the heart. Because I'm currently opening my heart. My personality type has a repressed heart center. And so it takes a lot of work to open it up and to be able to relate deeply with people. And so I can absolutely say the physical stuff is imperative. You need to do the physical stuff, but also it's not being afraid of people, recognizing that everybody's here to help us unlock something within ourselves. And that changes. That for me has been a big part of the heart opening process. It changes everything.
Yeah, and I think there's so many people who take an idea of an old relationship into a new relationship, and mm-hmm. every single person is different. Your new relationship will be completely different to the old one. But because it was bad or toxic or something, they'll take it and it will just carry, like you said before about the patterns, it'll just keep on repeating the pattern. So sometimes it's you actually sabotaging their relationship and not the other person.
Yeah.
I kind of put a phrase out about this, you know, what we think about will bring about as well. And so if you do bring it into your next relationship and, you know, say, for example, it's you are thinking that I bet they would be better off with somebody else. Whenever, you know, if you think about something like that, you become hypervigilant and sensitive to that, and you're looking to be proven right. The brain likes to be proven right. And so you'll look for you know, seeing signs that, yeah, they'd rather be with someone else. And your partner can feel that, you know, they can feel that on some level, whether it's really overt, they can see it because you've actually voiced it and you've made it known. You've asked them, would you rather be with that person? Or you're asking them to give you reassurance that, no, I want to be with you. If that kind of thing's playing out in your relationship, it's like a downward spiral from there, because it just gets draining for the other person. You know, if your ex did that, you know, it's like, well, I'm not them. But when you know, if you bring that in, you can end up, it'll end up going that way, because they probably would end up preferring to be with someone else at that point. If you are constantly saying, I bet you would, I need reassurance from you, you know, I think another person's like, okay, I can see you're hurt here, so I will have, you know, love and compassion for that to a degree. But if it's a constant thing and it's never going anywhere,
And it's becoming a problem.
Yeah. Then I think, unfortunately, the thing that you fear the most will come to fruition. You
yeah,
know,
if, absolutely. Yeah, if totally you're not agree. Aware of it. It kind of leads up to your attachment styles as well, doesn't it? So you know, I really wanted to ask you about attachment styles, because I'm diving deep into it right now, because I was just kind of I could get a PhD in attachment styles right now.
I just want to say, though, like, massive kudos for you for that, because you've noticed something about yourself and you have dived in deep about it. And I encourage anyone that's listening, like, because you can feel very much like you're so out of control with this stuff. But just as you're saying, you're diving in deep and it's having a massive impact on relationships for you. So I just wanted to point that out. That
thank you. Good. Yeah. And it was you, actually. I was going through hell. It was you, Madhya. You need to look at this one. I was like, okay, what's this? Okay, wrap it all. Coming. So obviously some of our listeners won't even know what attachment styles are. So what are the attachment styles and why is it so important to learn about them?
Yeah, so shall I describe it a little bit?
Yeah.
So I mean, if you look on the internet, they're kind of described in different ways. But the way that I learned it was, there's essentially four. There's secure. So this is where you are, you know, comfortable within yourself in a relationship. You're not really shaken about. You're pretty secure and confident and know yourself. You don't really project onto a partner. So there's secure. And then there's anxious attached. So this is where you need a lot of validation from the other person. Usually, you know, you're quite anxious in a relationship. You want, if they don't message within a certain time, then that can bring up a lot of anxiety for you. And then there's the avoidant type, where if normally an anxious person will get with an avoidant person. So if they get where someone's messaging in all the time, or upset that they didn't respond in the right time, you know, timely manner, then this is the avoidant type. They're like, oh, I can't deal with that. And they kind of pull away. And that's where this ghosting comes from. They're normally the people that will do that. And then the fourth one is anxious avoidant, or the ambivalent one. And this is where it's more of a push-pull. And you do a little bit of the anxious stuff, pull back when it's too much. When the other person comes back and does, you know, is too needy on you, then you pull back. And it's this kind of dance that plays out. But where it comes from originally is from when we were babies. Our attachment style is developed that early on. In fact, they did a study where they took these babies and put them in a room, these different babies that they've been studying for a year, and ones that they thought that had a secure mum, an anxious mum, and an avoidant mum. And then with these babies, they had the mum in the room and watched them and watched their behaviour. And the anxious babies were not really wanting to go play. They were kind of around their mum all the time. The avoidant babies were quite content and happy, but they'd usually go a little bit further away from mum than what you'd think. And the secure baby was kind of in the middle, maybe occasionally looking at mum and getting a little bit of eye contact and getting that look and like, oh, I'm happy and content now. I'm going back to it. Mm. So then what happened was they had these mums leave the room. And they watched the baby's behavior, and the anxious attached baby could not play or do anything. They were all consumed. They were devastated. They were really, really overtly upset. You could see that. The secure babies, they say they played for a little bit, and then they, you know, would cry a little bit. And then as soon as mum came in, they were soothed really quickly. That was one of the key things as well. The secure baby was like, ah, I'm secure, and go back off to play, and quite happy. And the avoidant babies, they noticed they just carried on playing, and they didn't do anything. They didn't cry when mum came back in the room. They didn't bother. They just carried on playing. But the interesting thing is they tested them, their cortisol stress hormone levels and their heart rates. And when the mum had left the room, the baby's heart rates were really, really high and their stress hormone was really, really high. And that's what creates these avoidant babies. So they are still having a stress response. They still are worried from an attachment standpoint. Their primary caregiver has left. But unfortunately, it's really sad, I think, but they've stopped crying or they've stopped acting out so that you would see that there's a problem, because they've come to realize that no one's coming to mm-hmm. soothe them. No one's coming to pick them up and make them feel better. And they've learned that. So they're self-regulating. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of from a baby standpoint. And then obviously we go about through adulthood, and depending on what our relationships are like, it's either gonna, you know, help us heal this if we have some, you know, good healthy relationships, or it's gonna make these attachment styles worse.
And we find that the avoidant always seems to get the bad rap, you know, like people who are anxiously attached often think that the people who are avoidant are just heartbreakers. But when you know this, you realize that you're both experiencing the same amount of stress. It's just that one person doesn't show it and the other person does.
Yeah. And it's really important to know that the other person, this is why I kept saying that, you know, it's really important to know what your attachment styles are and what your partner's attachment style is. You know, how can people, you know, whether they're anxious or avoidant, how can they move to secure? Is there a way they could move to secure? Is that a practical thing that they could do?
Where I'm at with this, I would say the first thing to do is to not go straight in with I want to become secure, but to go straight in with I want to be okay with where I'm at first. Mm-hmm. Right? I don't want to keep telling myself that I'm broken and I need to be different. Mm-hmm. So I would start with, okay, when I'm dating and this thing comes up, I get anxiety, I feel, and you want to get to know that extremely well. Like all the sensations that come up, you want to know exactly what it feels like in your body, where it lives, how it moves, what it's doing. You want to know the very earliest signs of that happening. So the moment someone maybe connects with you, you might be like, oh, I can start to feel shivers in my spine, I'm starting to feel like my heart's racing, my face maybe is flushing. Get to know it really well objectively. Mm. And then you separate you from that. So you observe that. We call it subject to object. So all this stuff that's going on in the body, all this heart beating, these worries, these panics, you are observing them. What does this feel like? Where is it? Does it have a shape? Does it have a color? Is it spinning? Is it jumping up and down? Is it spiky? Is it soft? Is it mist? Is it fluff? Whatever. You figure out exactly what it's like in the body. And just in doing that alone, we'll start to heal it. Mm. Just doing that, just getting to know it, because you're listening to it. The way that the unconscious speaks to us is through sensation in the body and dreams. But like the sensation in the body is the unconscious speaking about things that the conscious mind doesn't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So when these sensations come up, it's the unconscious saying, trigger, problem, wound, I'm hurting here. Like, look at me, hello. And then by us just literally feeling it, that objectification of it is, I would liken it to when you're a baby and your parents, your caregivers, give you 100% of their undivided attention. So they're not saying, stop crying, stop acting up, you're getting in the way, this is annoying, you need to be different. So if we're just saying, I want to be more secure, and we're thinking, I need to get rid of all these feelings, that's like taking that little kid who's struggling, the baby that Emma was just talking about, and when they're crying, it's kind of like just pushing them away, or saying, stop it, be different, which is part of what causes the problem in the first place, is the kids not feeling safe as they are and to be okay being themselves, you know. This is what causes a lot of our life problems. And so I would say, yeah, get to know those sensations. Just feeling them is the equivalent of being reparenting yourself, picking that little you up and giving them a hug and saying, it's okay, I'm listening, I'm here. You don't need to do anything differently. You just be you, and I'll just hold you while you continue to be yourself and express exactly how you feel. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with how you feel, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with how you're expressing it. And I would say, make friends with that. If anything's going to get you too secure, I would say it's that. But I would say, don't do that to get to secure. Do it to make friends with how you are right now.
Beautifully said. And I think IFS is really good as well, to go in that part of you that feels abandoned or rejected or things like that. IFS therapy is amazing. Yeah. So you talked about quite a lot about the honeymoon period wears off, you know. So when it does wear off, how do you prepare for that moment? And how do you keep the relationship going after the honeymoon period?
I mean, it's kind of a little bit of a repeat, I guess, in what we had said. It's like, obviously being aware that it's going to happen. I think that's massive, knowing that this is going to happen, because when it does happen, you know, depending on like attachment styles and things like that and your personality type, you might think that you've done something wrong, or, you know, and reading something that's not there. It's just the fact that these chemicals have settled down, and like Nikki said, they need to, and we've definitely felt that, because we were going to get nothing done if they didn't settle down. You know, so it's just being aware that that is going to happen, and then knowing that these things are going to come up, aren't they? That they're going to come up from the unconscious, yeah. That's we welcome that. We expect that to happen. You know, Russell Brand does a really funny, what does he call it? Like stand up, where he's talking about, oh, I'm sorry, I forgot to show you all these, and all these eels are coming out, and you're gonna you know, really, really, dark stuff. And you know, I mean, we joke about it, but we do have stuff in the unconscious. We're blind to it, obviously. That's why it's called unconscious. And so yeah, it's then, you know, hopefully if you've understood the 100% responsibility, same team, no projection, then this is just alchemy. Like, I can be free of all these things, or like Mickey had just described as well, not rejecting these things within us, but making friends with them. You know, these anxieties and fears and insecurities that we have, you know, they've come from, you know, a lot of what's happened to us, you know, have a lot of love and compassion for them, and allow them to be there within your body. And I know for my own self, when I do that, when I allow it, and I'm not being like, oh, I don't like that, I'm rejecting it, it's just this vicious cycle of self-berating about the fact that I've got this, and it's not budging, it's not going to go anywhere with that. But when I'm like, oh, it's welcomed, and I also realize it's mine, I'm not going to make it Mickey's issue, so it's not going to affect my relationship, it seriously releases its grip on it, your hold on you, and then you're just working from a completely different place. Because I am anxious attached as well, like when I do the quiz. But I think from a relationship standpoint, if I didn't tell him I'm anxious attached, I don't think he would be able to tell me that I am from my behavior. Well, I hope not.
No.
I mean, I am needy in a sense, as in I want a lot of love and affection. That's what I'm in a relationship for, you know.
But I want to give a lot of love and affection as well, so it's perfect.
And that's about the compatibility side of things. I want to be in his presence all the time. That's the type of dynamic that I've always wanted in a relationship, and he wants the same.
They kind of do change over time, don't they? Because I know, I remember Mickey mentioning in the course about you were anxious before as well, and but then now you're more secure. So, you know, I think it depends on who you are in a relationship with, I guess.
And it's who the other person's bringing out as well. And there's so much involved. It's, I think anybody who tries to give cookie cutter answers, you want to be dubious, because it's different for everybody, depending on your type, depending on where you're at in your development, depending on what caused it in the first place. This is why when I give the closest thing I can to cookie cutter, it's always you be okay with you as you are right now. That's the only thing I could say is a good start. But even then, it's that alone might not work, because you might have a really, really strong narcissistic tendency or something like that. I know for myself, I'm naturally really, really selfish. I need to catch myself not being selfish, to not be selfish. I need to catch myself being it. So I think, yes, cookie cutter answers are going to fall short. We need to know our personality type. We need to know who we are. We need to know where we're at. And once we have all that, we can start to then cultivate whatever we want in our life from that place. And that's conscious relationship as well. Mm-hmm. For example, some people like me, I need to shut up a bit and listen. That's the best way I could communicate, is to shut up and listen more. And for Emma, her communication skills for her is to speak up more. And that might change at some point. It might be for me to start speaking more, and it might be for you to listen more, and it changes, doesn't it? So it's difficult to give someone like a very specific response to this, which is why we do a course. That's why we do it, because there's so many nuances, if you know what I mean. It's like, yes, it's this, but if this is the case, then that's actually the opposite. And yes, the answer to this is kind of this, but then there's a few things that could make it the answer the opposite for you personally. And this is why in a course we spend 13 weeks going over it step by step by step, so people understand the nuances and things.
And
like
I think that speaks to as well all the data advice and stuff that you can look up out there that about the cookie cutter thing, where it doesn't work for all different for different people. Yeah. Like our style and the type of teaching that we do, a lot of people won't resonate with that whatsoever. But then there's like another camp, if you like, that are like, stand this way, do this thing, look this way, don't do that, don't give yourself over unless you've got X, Y, and Z, make sure you check for this, watch for this. And that's, you know, and I'm not saying that doesn't have its place for some people where they're at. It's that's perfect. It's what they need. So yeah, it just shows that it's not cookie cutter. It's so different for everybody. So wherever your heart feels pulled into learning more about it and it feels right for you, then, you know, that's your path, isn't it?
What I would say is use the honeymoon period to get to know each other and to make sure that you know how each other receive love. Learn about love languages, learn about driving instincts, learn about what it is that that person's driven towards instinctually. Are they all about self-preservation? Are they really more about intensity and attraction and magnetism? Are they more about social settings? They'd like to be out socially, and it's like, what are they being driven to? And so it's just, so there's no surprises when the honeymoon period wears off. Excuse me. And you're both going back to your normal lives a little bit more, but together, what does that look like? Where are they going to go back to? What's life like when they're not with you before they were with you? It's like, we really want to know this stuff just so when it wears off, we're not like, oh, well, I thought you were different, but now I'm realizing you want to go to all the football games, for example, and you like to hang out at the pub 3 times a week. And this might be a social person that likes to go out and do social things. And when the honeymoon period wears off, they want to go back out and do those things. And you're like, oh, they've taken all the love away. What happened to all the affection, to the love, to the time that was spent together? And it might absolutely not be a reflection of how much they love you in the slightest. It's purely, that's just how they are.
Yeah, I guess is it really important after the honeymoon period to be more compatible? So I think that's when compatibility kind of just comes first, doesn't it?
I think you're going to see more long-term compatibility, because obviously there's compatibility where it's like, for you're hot and I agree and, yeah, you know, we're going to hook up. So there's that side of compatibility in there. But when all this other stuff is coming up, it's kind of like that's the time to have the test, if you like, if you want to refer to it as that. That's where you're really going to see, are you actually compatible? Because obviously if you're willing to look at this stuff and want to evolve and grow, but your partner's not, then not very compatible at that point, because there's going to be a lot of resentments that go on there. And I was actually just speaking to someone the other day, and she said, you know, I'm all for growth. Like, we have issues, like, let's do something about it. I'm all about that. But she said, my partner is totally withdrawn and doesn't want to speak about anything. She's like, I can't work with that. I can't do anything with that. And that's
where you've got to make a choice.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that he's doing anything wrong for being that way. That's how he copes with things, and that's what he does. But it's like, where can you go from there together as a couple? It's really, really difficult to work with.
Yeah,
that's an interesting one. You know, we've been asked that, you know, does my partner need to be on the spiritual journey if I am? And we spoke about it, and we would say absolutely yes.
Yeah.
Or if it's not spiritual, even if it's just personal development, like, both partners need to be on it. Because I was never with anybody who was, and that's how we broke up pretty much every time, growing apart, because I was changing quite a lot and they were staying very similar to how they were. And that would keep happening and keep happening. Yeah. And that was what I said when we got together. I was like, I need someone who's going to grow with me. That's a need.
Yeah, I guess that's another thing that happens is when one of them goes through their own proper spiritual awakening and say, for example, they don't believe in anything and the other one just still stuck, then I guess you're not on the same wavelength anymore. It's exactly the same situation, isn't it? So you have to go off. And I guess, like you said before, they come in for a bit, one of them going to have a spiritual awakening and it's not going to work, and then they're going to go off different ways, and, you know, unless you're a twin flame, may come back together again when the other one has a spiritual awakening. So why is feminine and masculine energy so important in a relationship? Now, I'm not talking in a sense of a man and a woman. It could be a woman and a woman, man and a man, because we both carry masculine and feminine energies. So why are the roles so important?
So first of all, just in case anyone doesn't know, let's just talk a little bit about what these energies are and how they're different. So feminine energy, first of all, I'll start with this metaphor that I always use because it's the best one I've heard, which is a river. River banks are masculine energy, and the river itself is the feminine energy. And you can see that the masculine energy is strong, it's firm, it's stable, it's structured, it has direction, it goes from here to here, it knows exactly where it's going, and it stays that way, right? It knows its place, it's firm and strong. The feminine energy is different. The feminine energy is the water running through it. It's flows. It's spontaneous, has spontaneity. It's full. It's flowing. It's alive. And so you imagine that going through, bouncing off everything, flowing with what's coming up in life. Whereas the masculine energy is the container. So this is what they look like. So in terms of feminine energy, you imagine someone who's perhaps kind of playful, inviting, receptive, loving, and full of energy and love and movement, right? This is all feminine energy. And then the masculine energy is way more about making decisions, having direction, having a safe container, protecting the feminine, and the feminine supports the masculine. So when we understand what the energies are like, that's when we can see that we all have both, right? So it's like we all have intuition, which is feminine, but we all have the ability to analyze, which is masculine. So I would say when we start to balance that in ourselves, once we have access to both masculine and feminine, we can use our intuition and make decisions and take action. We can have a structure for our life and a strong direction. But within that, we have the ability to flow and pivot. As an entrepreneur, you might want to pivot your business and change it within the confines of, but I'm still heading in this direction. When we've got access to both these energies, then we can choose them on demand. We can say, this situation calls for feminine energy. I'm going to use my feminine energy in this situation. And maybe a day later, we might spend all day in our masculine because that's what it calls for. That ability to switch between them gives us the opportunity to choose to be attracted and attractive in relationships. So we can choose to be attractive when we know if someone's in their masculine or feminine, we can jump into the polar energy and that will create attraction immediately. So we can choose to, like we said, relationships go stale. If we understand masculine, feminine, and we've developed the ability to jump between them, we can choose to be attracted and to keep that magnetism there. So I'd say that's why it's a big deal, because that is what's happening in relationships. That's the dance. That's what keeps people together. And when that's gone, the people drift apart.
And like you talk about, don't you? Like if there's too much masculine energy and you're all bank and no river, then it's dry. And if you're like both in your feminine, for example, then the water is going everywhere. It's overspilling. There's no direction. Yeah. There's so emotion within that relationship that don't work either. So it is all about this polarity and having this balance. And to the point that even me and Mickey, we find that if we're both working and that's bringing a lot of masculine energy. If we're both in our masculine, then usually we end up going into separate rooms so that we can both be in our masculine energy, because when we're together side by side trying to work with that, we've come to realize that either one of us is not getting something done.
One of us will automatically drop into the feminine when the other's in the masculine. And so the feminine gets less done. The masculine is doing and the feminine is receiving, receptive.
Which is normally me. I'll drop into my feminine and I'll just listen to him because I can tell he wants to tell me about this thing he's doing and he's all excited about it. But then I've got things I want to do. So then it's like, see what's happening. And so, you know, we separate in that moment so we can both be effective and get stuff done.
Yeah. And then we'll just check in and we'll do the more feminine stuff, the more sort of brainstormy and talking about it and opening up ideas and flowing with what's coming up in the moment, which is more feminine energy.
Yeah, fantastic. So I've heard about tantric intimacy quite a few times on a spiritual journey. Can you explain to us what it is and why it's important?
This is an odd one actually for us to speak about, and I'll tell you why. Because
dun, dun, dun.
Well, we're not trained in tantra, but it happens anyway. This started happening again. It's probably the twin flame thing. I've read about it when I've read about twin flame stuff. So once I had this kundalini activation, and then when Emma and I got together, it jumped across and activated Emma as well. So then she started to have these automatic body movements. And then at one point we came together after Emma had finished work and I was not working. I was in the US. So I was just letting these automatic movements take over for hours and hours each day. And then when Emma came home from work, we came together, I gave her a hug and my body started to adjust her body. So it started to adjust her spine. And then I realized that I could feel all her meridians, all her energy channels in her body. And suddenly my body was just making adjustments like a chiropractor on Emma, and it just knew how to do it. So this we came to realize is tantra. This was only around the first, you know, we didn't even know what Kundalini energy was at this point, did we? It was 8 months after my activation that I learned what were happening. Mm-hmm. I learned about Kundalini. And then it was almost around that time that tantra started happening, weren't it? So sometimes it's sexual, but it's not always sexual at all. It can be completely non-sexual. You know, it can be hands-off orgasmic energy, which we've had, or it can just be completely almost cold, just movements that adjust the spine, adjust the hips, adjust the shoulders, and just does all this stuff. But then when it's sexual as well, it's extremely profound in that it's kind of like using breath work or using deep states of meditation or using entheogens, plant medicines. It can be kind of a mind-blowing experience. So why is it important? What we know of it so far from learning and studying yoga and from the tantra that we've been reading about. We have a book right here, actually. This one's about the sexual side of tantra, sexual secrets. So we're kind of learning about it retrospectively and then figuring out what it is that's been happening between us. And tantra is about the energy that's running through the body, right? The life force, the prana, the chi, whatever, people give it different names. And these wounds that we spoke about, so for example, if you have an attachment style of anxiously attached, this is almost like kind of a wound that we have. Tantra is sending healing energy to all our wounds. Our wounds tend to show up as blockages in our energy channels, in the meridians. And the way that we had it described to us was, imagine like a blocked hose pipe and then getting a piece of wire and sticking it down and blasting it through and disintegrating and dissolving the blockage, breaking the blockage so that it works again. Tantra is kind of doing that. Yoga is doing that. Breath work is doing that. Pranayama is doing that. It fires up the life force, clears the channels, and then the wound is healed. So I don't know how well I described that. Probably really, a little bit around the houses.
I think people who are probably tapping into it right now, they would like, you know, they would understand it better because you just described it.
And they might have a better... they might have a better way of describing it as well, but this is what we've seen to be true. So, for example, sex becomes sacred sex at this point, where it's as much a healing modality as it is a pleasurable thing to do, as much as it is a way that we connect. So sex and intimacy becomes multifaceted. There's lots of different reasons why it happens. And I'd say tantra is when it's a healing modality and an evolutionary as well, like it's unlocking spiritual gifts within us, deepening our existing spiritual gifts. So I wouldn't say it's essential in a relationship, and for some people it's probably just way outside of their remit of what they're capable of or want to do because it's just not their path in this life. But I think if you're at all pulled towards it and you're into energy, and you were in a conscious couple, I would absolutely recommend it. Like moving into it, it's so so exciting and so powerful.
So in your view, what should relationships be like?
Well, that's a tricky question. I think it's a very individual question, you know, because it's what should it be like for you. I think whenever we start to think about what it's like for other people and that we should have that, and I think it's just very much bringing it home to you and what is it for you, because, and not to make that wrong, because it certainly isn't the same for everybody. It's knowing what the purpose of your relationship is for you personally, and then going from there.
My answer to that would be growth facilitating. That's what there should be.
Absolutely, totally agree.
I mean, I think they always are, personally, whether you realize it or
whether
not.
You realize it,
they will be growth facilitating, whether, you know, it's a painful growth because you have to learn this lesson, but
Okay, so let's talk about your course. It's called Awakening in Relationships. So why did you choose that name and what's it all about?
So we chose Awakening in Relationships because, much like a spiritual awakening, which, you know, I think a lot of your people, you know, the audience listening to this will have heard of that term, where all of a sudden the blindfold comes off, the blinkers, you see a whole new world. That's what we want to bring for people throughout the course, is the awakening in relationships, because we're really not taught this stuff. Most of us don't really have good role models, you know, it's not really spoke about in schools or anything like that of what this should look like. I think, you know, me personally, you know, not that I mean, my parents are still together, but looking back, you know, at their relationship, it's you know, it works for them and everything, but it's just, you know, watching how it is for them and, you know, what I want in my relationship is just totally different. So I think the awakening in relationships is all around that, is just to take the blinkers off for you to get a load of information, because it is quite information dense in the beginning. You get to understand a lot of things, a lot about what we spoke about today, you know, the compatibility and how you can tell if someone's compatible with you or not. But then we then dive in and you get really deep in knowing yourself, throughout the course. And then, you know, what we spoke about on here as well, of getting really clear on what it is that you want, what's the purpose of your relationship, and really diving into that, and resolving a lot of these things, you know, a lot of these things that come up for you, and how to alchemize them, how to transcend them.
And we do literally in the 13-week course go through a process of awakening. Yeah. So it's taking the spiritual awakening concept, applying it to relationships, and then it's designed to go step by step through an awakening process as well.
Yeah, it's an amazing, amazing course. We'll get to the contact details afterwards if you want to get involved or if you want to join the course. But before we go, I want to ask you some rapid fire questions. Now, I ask this to every single person, so because I like grilling. And so, you know, Mickey and I won't definitely need to do it. So what happens, I'll ask you sets of questions and Mickey can go first and then I'm out, you know, whichever way. Okay, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So what is your definition of God?
The definition of God, it's the container that life lives within. The infinite vastness of nothingness, but that houses the intelligence that life that life appears within and manifests within.
Beautiful. What about you, Emma?
Scott, it's funny, isn't it? You know, depending on your upbringing, hearing the word God, it's not something that I was used to hearing, and had a little bit of an allergy to it. But like, oh God, that thing, God, that thing. I guess for me, it is realizing that everything is God, everything is one. You know, I realize that the God that lives within me, it's in everything. It's everything that I see. It's a reflection of everything. I think that's what it is for me, is just oneness. It's
beautiful. So what do you think happens when you die?
I think you go to,
well, these are good.
I think you go to that space where I, when I met my guides, and they operated on my body. I think I go back up and see those guys for a little while. And then I think I come back into another life. Now, I do wonder if that other life is going to be chronologically aligned, or if my next life might be 10,000 years ago. I don't know.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
But reincarnation.
Beautiful. Fifth dimension. Oh, no. What is it? 11th dimension, and then come back again.
I have a feeling we might go like through all the people, and then I think we might become a planet in a future.
Oh, that would be so.
We
awesome.
Are all the people, and then the goal is for the the planet and all its inhabitants to become enlightened. So yeah. In a single life, we become enlightened. When we're on a planet, it all becomes enlightened. Then it's a whole enlightened solar system. Then a whole enlightened galaxy. That's what I think happens.
Beautiful, man. I love that. What about you, Emma?
You know, I used to say like, oh, I don't really believe in anything like that, but I love the idea of it. I don't want to think that this is just it, but probably in the, you know, since I have become more spiritually awakened, I definitely feel like there's something more than this physical, you know, world that we're on here.
What is it then?
Yeah. All right, I'm getting to it. That was my build up. But yeah, I think we have been together, you know, I think families, I think you were definitely together before, maybe yeah. A different dynamic, maybe, you know, you're my sister in this life, but past life you were my mother or something like that. And I think as well, I don't know, I'm just kind of still playing with this thought, this notion, but that we're here to do a certain thing. And I think if we complete that, I'm not so sure that we would come back down onto this physical earth to do that. If we've actually finally got to that point, I think we then can be up there and be more the overseers and watching. And have you seen that movie Soul? You know, the Disney.
Oh yes, oh my God, I love it.
That's what happens.
exactly what's up.
I should have just said that, man. That would have been really...
Yeah, that was such a beautiful movie. Such a beautiful animated. I love it. Okay, so how do you this is going to be like, okay, so very quickly, how do you define religion and spirituality?
I'd say spirituality is doesn't have rules. And religion has rules. That'd be the difference to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think when I personally think of religion, if someone's really heavy within that religion, I think they can be really quite closed and quite rigid within that. That's at least been my experience with the religion, whereas I think spirituality is a little bit more open and everything's kind of welcomed. And I think in spirituality, we come to realize that essentially we're all talking about the same things, but everyone's just using different words and different languages and looking at a different ideology and a different, you know, we're worshiping something different, but ultimately it is the same. But I think somebody that is more religious perhaps may not like that, you know, if they think that theirs is the one true way. I'm not saying all religious people are that way, but that's what I think of when I'm thinking of the difference between the two.
So what's the lesson that took you longest to learn?
These are so good.
There's one that I've not quite nailed it yet. And it's part of my personality type, and that is that variety. The variety isn't necessarily, the spice of life. It's not always about variety. It's not always about having more opportunity, but it's taking one opportunity and going really deep with it.
Oh, yes. Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I think mine definitely ties into my personality as well. We refer to personalities a lot because we do work with that a lot, the Enneagram. And I think mine is probably realizing that I matter has been probably my biggest and hardest lesson. I've had, you know, my past relationships and where I've kind of put myself on the back burner and not expressed myself and my needs and just kind of gone along with everything. So I think to get to almost 40 years old now, and that I think that's what life was showing me, for me to understand my significance and my importance in this life. And I think, I'm not all the way there yet either with that. Still something that's difficult. I think depending on your upbringing, you think that can be quite arrogant to think about yourself, your needs, your wants, your desires. At least it was for me. So that is probably been mine.
Yeah, I think mine as well, because I'm the same personality type as you. It has been. Okay, so I'm fully in present moment when?
I'm fully in the present moment during orgasm.
Amazing. Oh my God. Oh. Okay. Okay.
How am I supposed to beat that? I guess I'm fully present. You know, I think a time when I've experienced it outside of orgasm is when I'm in service. You know, like when we've done retreats or something like that, and we're especially in person. I would say that my heart is so wide open, and then I'm there. I'm there for the person. I'm there for what's wanting to happen, what's wanting to come through. I think that's probably one of the times where I felt fully present, other than plant medicine, when it's like, freaking hell, it's brought me into the room. And I'm present then, all right, but that's a little bit of a rougher ride. But I think that.
Okay. So do you believe there is an end to healing?
I think there's a moment when we switch the name from healing to evolving. So yes, if you look at it that way.
Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think we do, you know, throughout this journey, I think there seems to be seasons for that where you feel like you're in that a lot and there's a lot of healing going on, and then it seems to rest a little bit, and then you might seem to kind of go back into that. And there's actually a certain stage of consciousness where it's all about healing and it's all about going in and feeling whole again and getting all this stuff out. I don't know if I really answered.
There's in the world of integral, they say wake up, grow up, clean up, and show up. Now, the way I see that is that when we're awakening, that's part of the healing, the sort of thing we awaken. Growing up is when we become mature cerebrally and mentally, and then clean up is when we do all the inner work, the trauma release, letting go of all the judgments and forgiving and everything like that. And then I believe that show up is when that's when you're more in evolution mode. You're showing up, you're self-actualized, and you're showing up as you, So I'd say that point when we go from clean up to show up is when we go from healing to evolving.
Oh, beautifully said. The world needs more of what?
Conscious relationships.
Yes. Yes.
But I'll tell you why, just very quickly. The reason why is because the only problems that exist in the world are in the human mind, right? That is
yes.
a problem until a human says that's a problem. Yeah. So the only way to heal the problems in the world is to heal the human psyche. And the only way to do that is to get right to the very root of it, which is newborn babies, parents. So it's like create conscious couples who have a massive amount of love and respect for each other, that then the child will have a massive amount of love and respect for themselves, because they see half of them as mum, half of them as dad, or whatever, they realize they're made of these two people. When they see two really healthy individuals, they will be healthy. And they will also know what a healthy relationship looks like, and they will bring that to it. So yeah. I feel like this is how we heal all the world's problems, conscious relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and it's not something it's taught in schools, and which is so annoying. You know, we're taught to go out there, do this, that, the other. Relationships is the most important thing, not just with your partner romantically, but like all areas. You know, you have to be working on it. Yeah. So, what is one message that you would like to share with someone who's going through adversity, who's going through their spiritual awakening, or lost in life? What would you tell them right now?
Do you want to go first, or do you want me to? I would say there's one thing that makes all the difference, and it's the earnest, the purity of seeking, how much you actually mean it deeply. So are you still trying to get something? Like when you're going through this adversity and you're doing this work, are you still trying to get something for you? Is it more of a selfish thing? Like, oh, if I get better at this, I'll get more girls, or get more guys, or I might be able to attract more money into my life. You're still in the process of trying to get, or are you earnestly wanting to know God, you know, to know love, to know the purest form of love, and to connect with the essence of who and what you are? It's how much you mean it, the purity of that intention. I would say focus on that.
I think I would say maybe a community. This is something that when I was going through adversity, that I wouldn't reach out to anybody, really, really private, really felt alone. And I would say if you're going through adversity, your best friend is reaching out to people in, you know, within the community. Like, thank God we have internet now. It's so broad. You know, like, I know if Mickey was a different person going through his Kundalini spiritual awakening, he would have thought he were going mad, you know, in some of the things that was happening. And, you know, fortunately he's got that about him, that he was like, something real is happening here. I'm going to go research and I'm going to go explore this thing. So I'd say that, you know, from a person, like I say, that went through it all alone, I think I stayed a lot longer in a really unhealthy relationship because I felt very alone. You know, obviously I created that situation. So I would say reach out to a community. There's like, whatever your issue with that you're working with, there's somebody out there that can assist you, that they've either been through it or something like that. And obviously you can do a lot of things privately, can't you, if you're not at the point where you want to put, you know, people to publicly know that you're struggling with this or that. So I would say, like, take a little bit of a load off, and if you can, reach out and get some help in whatever area it is that you're struggling with.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So how can people contact you, and if they want to take on the course, where do they go to?
Facebook is pretty much where we live. That's like where we provide a ton of value for people. We post usually multiple times a day, you know, and we're always open for chats and dialogue on their Facebook Messenger, anything like that. So there really is the best place. So I'm Emma Groves on there, and he's Mickey Owen.
Mickey with an E.
Yeah.
Not Mickey. Mickey.
Mickey. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
So that's the best place. Yeah, just reach out to us and then drop us a message, and we'll just go from there.
Yeah, fantastic. So we just come to an end of the interview now, guys. Oh my God, it's been absolutely mega amazing. I mean, I wanted to ask you so many more questions, but you know, next maybe we can get you in another series. So thank you so much for coming on this podcast, guys. Like I said, absolute honor interviewing you, and you guys carry so much knowledge and wisdom of relationships. That's just, it's just amazing, incredible, you know. And like I say, when I see you guys, you're my relationship goals. So we're all working towards you guys right now, and your love for each other is just incredible to see, and evolving, you know. So yeah, thank you so much. Is there anything else that you would like to say?
Just thank you as well. Thank you to you for this opportunity for us to talk about these things. And thank you to any listener that's made it all the way through to this point. If you are still here and you're still with us, and you know, no matter where you're at on the continuum of your life, I hope there was a little bit of something in there for you that spoke to you.
And I would say whatever it takes to find yourself. And if relationships is your vehicle, then that's your vehicle. For someone else, it might be trauma. For someone else, it might be something else. But yes, keep your eye on the prize. And it's all about reconnecting deeply with ourself, with essence. Relationships are brilliant for that.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Thank you.
Thank you. So much love.
Thank you so much for listening to Soul Awakenings with Madhya Sosan podcast. I would love to know what your biggest takeaway from this conversation has been. Share your thoughts on my Facebook and Instagram, Madhya Sosan. You can also check out my website, madhyasosan.com. If you would like to watch this episode, then head over to my YouTube channel, Mads Corner, M-A-D-Z Corner. If you enjoyed this episode, then please do rate and share this with your family and friends. Thank you once again, and I will see you on the next episode.